I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, D-Aliens. This is Miraz, your executive producer of the DA Show. Yeah, I'm going to say sidekick on the DA Show. And we all know the king of all work ethic. This right here, this is the best of today's DA Show. Listen up.
We do have to begin today with a little more serious stuff, and boy, it just seems like, Bogus, every show we do in 2020, there is going to be a serious tenor to the lead. And yesterday, for lack of a better term, a tidal wave coming at the Washington Redskins, and rightfully so, for a name change. And this is something that people have been calling for a long, long time, but in reality, nobody really was going to be able to hold Dan Snyder accountable. No amount of petitions that needed to be signed, no matter fan backlash, media backlash would matter until money came into it, because money talks. And Bogus, that is where we begin. It is your cold open.
A Redskin is a football player. A Redskin is our fans. The Washington Redskin fan base, it represents honor, represents respect, represents pride, hopefully winning, It's a positive. I would like people to know the history of whether it's Lone Star Deeds, whether it's Walter Blackie Wetzel in Montana. It's just historical truths. And I'd like them to understand, as I think most do, that the name really means honor, respect. We sing Hail to the Redskins.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That is Dan Snyder from 2014. So if you missed this news yesterday, a lot has changed, obviously, over 6 years. First and foremost, the name of where the Washington Redskins currently plays, FedEx Field. FedEx being a major, major sponsor of the Washington NFL franchise. And they sent a memo, a letter to Dan Snyder, basically demanding a name change and demanding that they get off the Redskin name. And now that is a huge deal and something Dan Snyder had to deal with, because if it got to the point where FedEx pulled out of sponsoring the field where they played and pulled out as a big sponsor, that's a lot of money out of Dan Snyder's pocket. But as if that wasn't enough, the merchandising rights to all the NFL teams are owned by Nike. And Nike has now pulled all Washington Redskins gear off their websites. And again, a great way to make money, especially during this pandemic. If you're an NFL franchise and fans may not be allowed through those gates and buying tickets and buying hot dogs is online, you still want your merchandise sold. And if Nike's not going to sell your merchandise, that is a major, major hit to the wallet of Dan Snyder. So now that's not one, but two big-time corporations putting the heat on Dan Snyder, Bogus. And let me just preface this by saying, I think the beauty about America in a lot of ways and being a person is your opinion is allowed to change and evolve over time as you learn more and study more. And I have to be honest, back in 2014, I think I was with Dan Snyder. I had always viewed, especially being a Giant fan in the NFC East, the Washington Redskins as a honoring of Native Americans, not some kind of slight. And as the years go by and as race relations really become truly prevalent in this country and the push for equality as it should be, I have really come around to the fact that I want this earth and somewhere, now that I have a child, to be a place where we literally do not identify people by the color of their skin. I think you could have a lot of pride about your heritage and your background, but a human should be a human being. And the moment we start identifying skin color and skin tone, you're immediately changing the tone that people are different and that is wrong. And if I'm going to feel that way, how could I be okay with identifying an NFL franchise with the skin tone or supposed skin tone of Native Americans calling them Redskins? So my opinion on this has absolutely changed. And ultimately, look, there are going to be a lot of really hardcore Redskin fans that's all they knew that team as, that are going to think this is ridiculous. Why are you changing the team name? And ultimately, look, 10 years are going to go by, 15 years are going to go by, 20 years are going to go by, and whatever the new team name is, that new generation of kids are only going to know that team is that. And it also doesn't mean you have to rip down banners where the Redskins won Super Bowls and pretend that franchise didn't exist. No, it's still the franchise. We've seen it in college basketball. The Red Men became the Red Storm at St. John's. I saw last night, and I know there's plenty of name changes out there, the idea that you can make them the Red Hawks, and in many ways, a lot of the logos and imaging can stay very similar, and I wouldn't have a problem with that either. So nobody's asking to wipe the slate clean and act like the Washington Redskins never existed, but look, this is about change. This is about just seeing things differently, and even if the name was honorable, it's still referring to people and skin tone that is different than theirs, and that to me is a movement we need to, be for and get away from identifying people like that. So I think it's great that Nike and FedEx are doing this. Put the pressure on, and look, I've changed on this. Just change the damn name already, and it's time for Dan Snyder to do it, Bogus.
Yeah, I would agree for sure that you can have good intentions, right? In theory, like, you can be trying to honor someone or somebody or something and do it in the wrong way. So I don't, this is not saying that the name Redskins began as an immediate, dismissal of somebody,
right,
or a way to minimize somebody. Like, in theory, it could have come from a respectable place, but an innocent place. But like, as you said, I mean, there's no other way around the fact that we would not stand for a team being called the Blackskins or the Yellowskins or the Brownskins.
Right.
So, like, this shouldn't be okay either. And this is oversimplifying the end game as well, but, like, I can't imagine feeling, and I've tried to do it because this conversation has gone on for a long time now, and I've been on the name change, pro name change for longer than you. So, I mean, like, I've tried to put myself in this position, like, if the Giants or the Mets or the Rangers, teams that I love, were in this position and had to change their name, like, it wouldn't make me not love them. It wouldn't make me stop watching and paying attention and caring about them and following them. I might be mad for a little bit. I might be mad for a long time. I might be, vocally mad and be standing right next to Dan Snyder and saying, absolutely not. But then the next time they played a game, I'd be watching and I'd be excited if they won and angry if they didn't, like normal. So even if you're now a Redskin fan and you're freaking out about this name change, it doesn't seem in the end that important to me that the name can't change and the name can, and all of this controversy and back and forth can just end and you can move forward. And like you said, it's not that we have to bury the past and forget, the Hogs and Doug Williams and anybody else. Like, the history is still there. Just moving forward, we've got a name that's not offensive. And I think that is probably, makes a lot of sense, and everyone should basically be on board with that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also, you bring up the point about putting yourself in that position of not being a fan, still being a fan. If any professional sports city in America could be used to this, it should be Washington, right? Because there was a point in time, Bogus, when we were very young, where the Washington Wizards weren't the Washington Wizards. They were the Washington,
right,
Bullets. And they have changed their name, and it's funny to even look back and think, oh yeah, they were the Washington Bullets. Like, we've already gotten to that point with the Washington Wizards. And it wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was our lifetime that they were the Washington Bullets, and that's the same city, and I would venture to guess most of, if not all, Washington Bullets fans, if they like NFL football, were Washington Redskin fans. So you can't tell me if you're that old a Redskin fan that you haven't been through this, and you can't tell me you don't like the Wizards or aren't showing up to Wizards games because they're not the Bullets anymore. So that's a city in a weird way, and a sports market in a weird way, that should already be accustomed to this and be prepared for it, and honestly should be ready to handle it, maybe, and not that it needs that much emotional handling, but better than most markets and most cities because they already dealt with it in the NBA.
And you know what, Sean? In all honesty, too, let's say the name changes to whatever it is, and maybe they think of the perfect name change that makes great sense, and everybody's satisfied, and the colors stay the same. If you want to, sitting in your basement, talking to your buddies, call them whenever you want. Still, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
good
if
point.
You need, if you need to say, I'm still a Skins fan, or man, I can't believe the Skins suck, whatever. Like, go. Fine. In your basement, in your backyard, text messages, whatever. If you want to hang on to that, whatever. I'm not going to lose sweat over that. It is what it is. We're talking now about, like, TV graphics and merchandise and saying it in a professional way, whether it's on TV, on a radio show, in a newspaper. The name will change there. If you need it to still be called, this will be called the Redskins, they can still be called the Redskins in your world. You can refer to them as that. You can use it, it's okay, not that I would do it myself, but, like, you can do it. Like, no one's going to stop you. No police are going to knock on your door and say, stop saying that name. So, like, again, there's the change to me is important, but it's also not radical or overwhelming or so significant that it should have people so staunchly against it and, like, for, you know, threatening to stop following the team, or like that just seems such an overreach to me and unnecessarily, you know, an emotional response to all of this.
Yeah, and now the question remains, will Dan Snyder actually feel the heat or will he punch back? My prediction is within the next year, even if they play this season out as the Redskins, or if they want to wait, I would even give them this. If Dan Snyder agreed that because there's probably going to be no fans, that he wanted to give his fans one more year to sit and watch the Washington Redskins play, I would actually, if he firmly agreed with, said, hey, we're going to get through this season, next season, 2021, that'll be our last season as the Redskins because we want fans in the building. You know, we'll salute, you know, that historic part of this franchise on the way out. And by 2022, we're the Washington Redhawks or the Washington Generals or whatever you want to call them. I would be okay with that, but we need some sort of acknowledgement from Dan Snyder, I think, that, okay, he hears the cries, he sees the cries, this is now big companies affecting the cries, and we got to set a target date that this thing is going to change. 855-212. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Give the phone number.
Just so Pete can take down the music. 855-212-4227. What do you got, folks?
The only thing for Snyder next, though, like, is he's not having a change of heart here. Like, he's not going to see the light or come to the other side or finally acknowledge, you know, people's objections to the name. So, like, he's doing this for business. He's doing this because he wants a new stadium, and he's been told that he can't build a new one on publicly owned land if this is still the team name. So this is about dollars and cents and business.
Sure.
So not to excuse him or give him an out here or an excuse, I just don't know what he's going to say that's going to really matter in this, because we are going to know exactly why he would be instituting a change if he's doing it. And, you know, all cards on the table as this begins, because this conversation is going to happen a lot. Like, I don't like Dan Snyder. There's no reason, as far as I know, to like Dan Snyder. I mean, the building is terrible. The team is apparently run badly. The stadium is a mess. On top of the name issue, he fights all these petty fights with people who can't critique him and can't call him out. I don't know anyone that really legitimately likes Dan Snyder. So I'm trying to put that aside here and look at this objectively as we kind of fight through all of this and figure this all out. But, you know, I have no hopes for him, whether it's soon or down the road, in handling this well, Sean. I mean, it's going to be ham-handed. He's going to be short-sighted and probably say some stupid things. I have no faith in him actually. If he does go down this road of changing the name, to do it in a respectful manner. But I guess that remains to be seen.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, and that's why. And I want to make this clear, because maybe there'll be people that could outrage and go, 2 years. You want them to be the Redskins for 2 years? All I'm trying to paint there is a kind of fair compromise to the true and true Redskin fans who have a problem with it, but also the understanding that this needs to be changed, and for Dan Snyder to be changed too, because I do think that there is history there. There are fans who don't view that as offensive there. There obviously is an owner that doesn't view it as offensive there. I don't think he'll handle it well, but I think if you allowed Dan Snyder, which maybe he shouldn't be, you know, allowed anything, that breathing room of, okay, here's 2 years, to get you're one more year of fans in 2 years, then at least even if he's being pressured to do it, it kind of is a happy compromise that, okay, we are going to rid and cleanse ourselves of this name while still giving them the proper, we're not asking you to rip it down before we kick off in September. That's all I'm throwing out there.
But, and, you know, the Nike angle to this is unique to me, and I haven't seen it really fully explained or kind of fleshed out here. But, you know, as you said, Nike has the NFL's merchandise deal, especially for on-field apparel, and they're not selling Washington stuff right now. And in fact, apparently from Pro Football Talk, if you go to the website and, like, look for on drop-down menus and search bar, you can't even search. You get no results if you put in Washington Redskins. And, I, you know, this is complicated lawyer stuff, but, like, that almost to me reads as, like, an indirect NFL statement to Dan Snyder. Because, like, I just, it's hard for me to think that Nike, as this level of business partner with the NFL, would make this decision without a heads up to the league, and the league at least indirectly, like, vouching for it, right? I mean, I can't imagine that Nike would just go rogue on this and do this without telling anybody and making sure it's not going to anger the wrong guy back in league headquarters, let alone Dan Snyder. But, like, you don't need the commissioner's office calling you and going, what the hell are you guys doing right now?
Well, so you're probably right. The only counterargument I would make to that is, if you are in the camp that you absolutely believe that there was a coalition that was, if you will, blocking Colin Kaepernick from being signed in the NFL, Nike had no problem during that going and making sure that Colin Kaepernick was basically the face of their company for a little bit as well while they were partners with the NFL. So to me, I wouldn't put anything past Nike as far as, like, hey, they're going to make their call with their contracts and their company business, and be damned if you're the NFL. So I just look at the way the Colin Kaepernick evolved from the NFL standpoint, from Nike's standpoint, and go, well, it kind of feels like to me like Nike can call their own shots here without any backlash from the NFL.
At least, though, that was technically separate, but it did certainly create, like, the conflict that's in my head right now. But, like, this is Nike not selling NFL merchandise.
Right.
And that to me seems like something that they can't or wouldn't do without at least running it up the flagpole at Park Avenue with the league bosses.
Certainly an interesting dynamic.
For the final time this week, sit back and be stunned.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So, if you have about $7.5 million to burn, you can own a replica Wild West town in New Zealand. Mellon's Folly Ranch was built just in 2006 as an homage to a Wyoming frontier town circa 1860, and it is on sale at the moment. The property includes a fully working and licensed saloon, a courthouse, three houses that can hold a total of 22 people. It's fully functioning. It's currently working as a hotel, basically, for about $5,000 a night. You can pretend you're a cowboy in the wild, wild west. And now if you want to own this bad boy, again, the asking price starts at $7.5 million, and it's in New Zealand, and not just in New Zealand, but a remote part of New Zealand. It's about 6 hours away from the nearest big city, which is Auckland. So on top of the $7.5 million, you need to be able to get to New Zealand, and then it makes the most sense to helicopter to the actual site. Oh. But if you love the wild, wild west and you love New Zealand, I got a place for you.
So here's the classic open up a business and it's wrong location situation. To get to have, first, when you have a place like this, the whole point is tourism at some point. And to be 6 hours away from the nearest city in New Zealand, I can't imagine that this has been a real tourism peak place to go sit in a fake saloon. So to buy this for $7.5 million, I think you almost have to have plans of setting up shop and almost being rich enough to live there out in the wilderness and pretend you have your own little town with your own little bar.
Yes.
And honestly, this would probably be the perfect place to live during quarantine, right? You can pretend you're going out. You make your own little rules. Heck, you know, all these people don't want to wear masks. You buy this place for $7.5 million, walk in and out of the bar and the courthouse without a mask all you want. You're living on your own property. I guess that would be that would be where you could do that, but it is brutal. I mean, $7.5 million to go live 6 hours away and then hope that people come there and pretend to be Cowboys. And I didn't know that pretending to be a Cowboy was a thing in New Zealand. I kind of thought that was something maybe you just do in the Grand Canyon and the United States. I didn't know internationally we were doing old Cowboy set-up towns. And the other thing that would be creepy about this, Bogus, have you ever seen the movie House of Wax? It's like a scary movie. Paris Hilton was in it. It's kind of like a guy sets up a town.
No, I have not seen it.
Well, a guy sets up a town that looks very similar to this, and he basically has all these wax figures, and, you know, these people, their car break down, and they think it's all cool. Turns out it's, like, old dead people he, like, made and waxed up, and he was, like, a murderer. So when I see a town like this, I immediately think, weirdo owns this, somebody's out to kill you, get as far away as possible. So I would never vacation at one of these spots.
Now, I have to be honest, and you know me, I am in no way tough or good outdoors. I like showers. I'm a big fan of indoor plumbing. But, like, I'm kind of infatuated with the Wild Wild West and being a cowboy and saloons. Oh. And, like, you know, Deadwood is a tremendous show. I if I could time travel, that might be the first place I go.
Oh.
And, like, I'd ride a horse. I'd be dirty. I'd have chewing tobacco on my lip. Like, I'd be, like, I want to be able to do this, not in a fake way, like in the real way. So, like, this starts to make a little sense to me, but, like, not, like, I wouldn't go there if I lived in Auckland and it was 6 hours away from me. But now I got to get to Auckland and then go 6 hours and then pay at least $5,000 for a night there. It's too much. But, like, I'm on the periphery here of their target audience, but I'm not going anyway.
No. You absolutely can't, and you don't want to be back in the Wild Wild West anyway. You ride a horse, you turn around next to you, know, you're in a gun draw, and you're dead. So, no, that's not a place you want to be at all.
Thanks get for thinking of me.
Get rid of the Wild Wild West. All right, that's Thunder News, the final one of the week. Yesterday, we took our shots, might have been around the same time at Major League Baseball, for continuing on with this dopey Field of Dreams game. In a year where shouldn't we be trying to limit the amount of unnecessary travel? It's a gimmick that makes no sense. I don't know why we're still playing it. And it was, I think gimmick is the word we used. And yesterday, as I scrolled Twitter or sat down, threw on CBS Sports Network or whatever the heck I was watching for a little bit, and the bottom ticker came across with the idea of a second NBA bubble. And I must be honest, I don't know where you stood when you first saw the news. My immediate reaction was, wow, Adam Silver is calling an audible and trying to pull some teams out of Orlando because of all the spikes in Florida. And, okay, all right, let's see where this goes. Maybe this makes some more sense. What I didn't see coming, and maybe I should have, was the idea that the second bubble was for all the loser teams that aren't involved in this anyway and probably won't happen until September. And I think my immediate reaction was, what? What? And as I look more into it, the more I hate it even more. So basically, I'll just paint the picture again real quickly before Bogus and I break this down. The season was abruptly ended, I believe, on March 11th. I believe that is the date that we last saw NBA players take the court.
I think 11th was the night of Rudy Gobert. I don't know when did the next morning when they technically said no more games?
Yes, we were on the air. Okay. EA was out. Yes, they pulled the plug by midnight that night. We were suspending the season. Remember, there was the image of Mark Cuban going, what are they doing? As he rushed down. So, yes, so March 11th. It's funny because I was at a Nets-Bulls game March 8th. March 11th was the last time any of these teams took the court. And obviously we will have this bubble with all the teams that are currently alive. But I believe, Bogus, is it 7, 8 teams? How many teams are out?
8.
8. So the 8 teams that are out, now think about this. If the NBA season is going to start up again at some point in December, there's been speculation whether that's the first week of December. I think that's their target. There have been other people saying just wait till Christmas. But nonetheless, December is there. That would leave you, for those teams that are out, with about 9 months, which is, you know, I mean, at that point, you're closing out almost a year since you would have seen them play basketball. And a lot of the teams not involved did kind of, you know, poke their head out and go, well, hold on now. We're basically going to disappear as a franchise for almost a year. And in the end, I think the NBA now is overthinking this, where they're trying to allow these teams to play each other and then work out and find a safe way to do that so that they can exist as franchises. But here's the problem. Nobody, not even the fans of those teams, cares enough. if the whole point of we're not going to play for nearly a year is, yeah, I mean, imagine you're a Knick fan, you're a Hawk fan, you're a Bulls fan, you're not going to see your team play for nearly a year. Not one of those fans, I can't find, I'm telling you, even the most diehard of fans of any of those teams, is going to then, when a team, when his team shows up to play the other losers in a bubble in September, go, yes, I get Knick basketball back. Yes, the Bulls are playing tonight. No, because the games will mean nothing. They're basically to just be like watching Summer League with the real players. It's an exhibition. You're pulling the other players with this extended summer break off to come in and play unnecessary games. And by the way, you're just creating another bubble where you, if you think the player's playing for a championship, there's a chance they may break the rules and go out and get infected. What the heck do you think is going to happen with any of these players playing for nothing? You think that it should be, oh, yeah, absolutely, put armed guards outside this hotel in Chicago and make sure we stay in this bubble. What are you, nuts? I mean, and we talked again yesterday, Books, about Adam Silver a little bit, how this guy continues to get so much credit while he does a lot of stupid stuff. Have we now passed the baton and a second bubble might be the dumbest thing we've seen from Adam Silver in the NBA?
Although apparently this is not completely his idea. Michelle Roberts, who's the head of the PA, the Players Association, she prefers and is driving to have this. Like, she, for whatever reason, it's important to her. And I guess she has the support of some players in this, because she wouldn't be out on a ledge by herself, because she works for them in the end. That she or they want. They want a replica Disney bubble. But the teams, which, and this makes more sense to me, if you have to do something, like, I, when push comes to shove, I would think, Sean, that these guys would all be okay if they did, in fact, go 9 months
yes.
between games. When they get back, to, you know, if everything is fine and training camps in November, these teams could go back a little earlier and have more time prepping for next season, since they haven't played in such a long time. And I think they would eventually be okay. But if they need to do something before December, the alternative from the team perspective is, let us work at home and we can go play teams around us, you know, almost like little mini regional sites. Now, it's only 8 teams, so,
right.
And like off the top of my head, they are kind of spread out. I mean, one of them is the Knicks. I guess the closest one to the Knicks then would be the Hornets, off the top of my head. So, I mean, it's not like we could just drive
the Cavs,
from the Garden to Brooklyn.
The Cavs, maybe.
Right, so like it takes a trip. So, but even that to me at least makes more sense than creating this second scenario, which on one hand is supposed to be safe, but the logistics and the added risk of having all of these people back in one place from different parts of the country, it doesn't seem worth it to me for glorified practices.
I agree with you completely, because when you really think about it, we have sat here and done almost a story a day for 2 weeks about concerns about the NBA bubble in Orlando. And this
right.
is a bubble created to crown an NBA champion, with the playoff teams involved, with LeBron James involved, with Kawhi Leonard involved. And we have so many questions about how this will work. Will they even be able to finish without some kind of infection coming through? And you're creating another situation that you have to keep an eye on if you're league, that you're responsible for if there's a coronavirus outbreak, for if you're the league, because you've taken the measures of this that you need to pump money into doing. And in the end, for what? For what? The teams themselves, do you think that the Bulls, Knicks, Hornets, Cavs, whoever else we're throwing in here that's involved in this, is going to suddenly go from next year winning 30 games to winning 45 games because they made sure they were in a bubble in September and didn't have a 9-month layoff? No. This will have zero impact on how prepared and how ready these teams are for the 2021 season. I'm sorry. It will have absolutely zero impact on it. So the idea that these guys can't – and I saw – that I believe it was the GM of the Hawks, I think I have to double check this, said we'd much prefer just to run our own practices in September or something like that.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they should be doing. There's no need.
Yep.
And if the point is you want to maybe tell, because again, they were concerned so much originally about the fans missing out on their team. Are you going to televise these games? And what fans in September, who are already basketball fans, who are already going to get the NBA playoffs as it is in September, on top of the NFL football and maybe college football, baseball player. Like, there is so much going on. Nobody, frankly, is going to give a rat's ass about eight loser teams playing in a bubble in Chicago. So there is no point to this whatsoever. It will have no positive impact on these teams. Again, it's one of those situations like we brought up with the MLB in Iowa. Only a negative can come of this. It is, we are overthinking this thing now beyond belief. Beyond belief. And it would be so NBA, by the way, for now Orlando being with that Florida hotbed to go off without a hitch. Everything happens smoothly. The NBA really lucks out there, all eyes on it. And then suddenly the entire Hornets team is like infected with coronavirus because you created a second unnecessary bubble and a distraction for Adam Silver to have to answer questions about while his, you know, his, the NBA finals are being prepared to play for. What is the freaking point?
And putting COVID aside for a second, the Hawks are the perfect team to bring up in this scenario. If I'm in charge of the Hawks, there is zero chance that I am letting Trae Young near any of this. Like, what do I do if Trae Young blows an Achilles or tears his ACL playing in this pseudo-summer league game against the Misfit Knicks in Chicago on a Wednesday afternoon in the middle of September? Now, and I know he can get hurt at any time, at any place, and if this doesn't happen and if there's no official gatherings that these guys are going to find ways to play pickup games, we've all seen the videos from the summer, whether they're at UCLA or the fancy gyms here in Manhattan. I mean, they're mini all-star games. So these guys are going to play. They're going to find ways to do it, and they certainly could get hurt in those scenarios. But getting hurt in like an official, basically meaningless exercise would be mind-numbingly dumb. So let them, if they need to do something, let them stay home and be in their own building. And if they want to get on a bus and play somebody nearby and you know how to, you know, create a safe situation for that, then so be it. But the idea of creating another bubble and all the things that go into it, including, you know, the cost and everything like that, I just don't get it. And I don't know why the union would be driving for this more than the league. If the league wanted like a secondary business operation because they were going to put these games on TV somehow, like that would make more sense. When I read that the union was the one that really had its foot down trying to get this done, I don't see their motivation there. The players can get, if they need to play, they can play in their own place without travel, without being around everybody else, without this weird clean sight happening in Chicago. Why they want this so strongly, I'm not going to understand. And if it happens, man, they're just asking for trouble on a number of different fronts to do this in Chicago at some point.
Yeah, and the union point of this is huge. Is the union even working for the players? Because, I mean, yesterday, if DeMar DeRozan complaining about not playing doubles ping pong, you've had Damian Lillard basically trashing the idea of the real bubble. And again, the union obviously worked towards, there are players here who want some bonus money, who want to play for a championship. The overwhelming amount do. But where, what I say is, if the union is pushing for the second bubble, I have a very difficult time thinking that Frank Ntilikina and the Knicks are like, hey, union, please push for something. We want to be in a bubble too. We want to go play.
Sounds awesome.
Right. We want to go play these teams, right? We want to play the Cavs. I'm sure Tristan Thompson, in the middle of his fights with Khloe Kardashian, is like, you know what? I got to get to Chicago, and I got to go play in a bubble and go play the Hawks. Like, there's no way. So who spoke to the union about this? I can't imagine. There's an overwhelming amount of these players who are being gifted 9 months off going, man, I really could use going to play in a bubble in Chicago. There's no way that's happening. I can't believe that. I refuse to believe it.
And they want to sign off on like isolation. If you stay home, play at your own gym at your own facility during the day, and then at night you can do whatever you want.
Right.
Like you're gonna sign up for like not seeing your wife or your girlfriend or whomever for a couple of weeks because you need to get some 5-on-5 action in with team from other NBA teams. I mean, the way usually, you know, these guys are able to organize these crazy high level pickup games because in the offseason, they all kind of cluster, right? I mean, there's guys here in the New York area. There's guys in California, Atlanta, and there's a huge NBA city for permanent residences, and obviously Florida and other places. So, like, they can find competition. Even if you want to, Sean, like, not have them separate as teams, but almost do it, like, geographically. Like, the guys living in Atlanta can go play together in the Hawks facility. The guys living in New York, whether they're Knicks or Cavs or whom, or, you know, whoever, like they can play there. If you want to do it that way, then you might actually have increased levels of competition because you've got more guys, more talent. But like to pick up all these guys and for them apparently to want to sign off on living in overwhelmingly restrictive situations for even a couple of weeks, I don't get it. And I'm glad that you presented it at the very beginning in contrast to the MLB Field of Dreams game, because that is and continues to be stupid, but it looks like a Mensa move compared to the possibility of this extra bubble in Chicago.
It is mind-bendingly dumb, and I will be from the top of my perch shouting this out. Adam Silver is overrated. Adam Silver gets too much credit, and I know he's not fully to blame for this, but the amount of Adam Silver love continues to just make me shake my head every single day. Rob Manfred goes on the Dan Patrick Show and makes a proclamation that people ran with the headline and didn't fully, I guess, grasp the context. But again, this becomes a problem if you're a commissioner. We shouldn't have to guess context. And says that, well, you know, we were only going to basically play 60 games anyway. And this had people furious because obviously we had this whole public battle, Bogus, between the MLB and the MLBPA and how many games and the proposals and this, that, the other thing. And when you see a headline like that and you hear Rob Manfred say that, it's going to drive you bonkers. Now, what Rob Manfred meant to say was, because of course they proposed, was it a 75 or an 80-game season? I'm forgetting which was what. At 75% prorated pay, that of course the players didn't take because they wanted the 100% prorated. Rob Manfred and the MLB did not propose that with the idea that they wouldn't play it if the players took it. I think if the players took it, they absolutely would have played that. So when he says this 60-game season thing, you know, people have to understand they did make a proposal that I'm sure they thought the players wouldn't take, but they absolutely would have done it had the players took it. The real problem I have here is we give Roger Goodell a lot of crap, right? Because Roger Goodell, unless you get that, you know, State of the Union address he has at the Super Bowl or whatever at the owners' meetings, you don't hear from him. Roger Goodell's not coming on the DA show. He's really not going on the Dan Patrick show. He's not going on Jim Rome or any of our great CBS Sports radio shows. And people kind of crush Goodell for that. But at the same time, Goodell fumbles all over himself so much that it's probably a win that less is more with Goodell. And I think now we're getting to the point where Major League Baseball with Rob Manfred, this has been a pandemic and extended offseason where I think Major League Baseball needs to take a hint going forward. Too much Rob Manfred is a bad thing. Whether it was making the guarantee that there will be baseball only to backtrack and go, now he's not so sure. Whether it was calling the World Series trophy a piece of metal that really ticked off players. And now this interview where he's saying the 60-game season thing. And look, this is where you know the going's bad, Bogus. Yesterday, Major League Baseball has to issue a statement to clarify the commissioner's words. If you have a commissioner whose main job really should be is the mouthpiece for your league and understanding that nothing he says should ever be lost in translation or have to be clarified, and how many times that was Major League Baseball had to issue some sort of statement to re-clarify whether it's the piece of metal or whether it's the 60-game season thing, Rob Manfred, frankly, is not cut out for this. Anytime you have to re-clarify what your commissioner is saying and it has to be done multiple times in a certain amount of months, or he has to flip-flop on what he's talking about with guarantees, he's simply not cut out for the job. Rob Manfred needs to just shut up, Bogish.
And in particular, he is not allowed to backtrack from what he said to Dan Patrick on Wednesday. This is the sentence. The reality is we weren't going to play more than 60 games no matter how the negotiations with the players went. That's it. That's what he said.
Right.
Are there more than one way to look at that? I guess so. But the predominant way to look at that is that this is what they were going to get. This is what they wanted no matter what. And they, them being the owners, dragged their feet to get there, which connects us to the idea that they were never bargaining in good faith, which could lead to a player's grievance, which could lead to millions and millions, if not more, dollars going to the players because the owners messed up here. And the clarification is what he meant was, had they started and reached an agreement sooner and the season had just restarted, they would have been in spring training,
right,
in Florida and Arizona when these cases went on this uptick in the last, 10 days or 2 weeks.
Right.
And I guess that would have then hit the pause button on the season. And by the time they restarted it after a couple of weeks, they would have been in the same calendar window where they could only have gotten 60 games in. There's no way that that sentence from Wednesday includes the foresight of Arizona and Florida going into this current tailspin. There's no way that is what he meant when he said what he said on Wednesday. So I give him no pass on this.
See, I think I disagree with you a little bit. I could see him meaning that. I can see him meaning that. But the problem is, even as a communicator, your assumption that everybody is going to assume you mean that is very tone deaf to how every fan perceived the MLB versus MLBPA negotiations, where it was all basically a farce anyway. So I could get behind it because I could understand that being the case, that, yeah, had you done this, we would have been in some trouble right now. But you can't even you can't assume that fans are going to think that. You just can't. So you're not giving him a pass, and I totally get that. I'll give him the slight pass in I could believe and buy what he's selling. But you want the idea that you're assuming that and just saying that just again shows me you're bad at what you do, and that is supposed to be the mouthpiece of, you know, putting out there the MLB message, and this is just, there's too many strikes now. Rob Manfred's not cut out for this.
But there was no mention, not even a hint, that the negotiations went on for as long as they did because MLB was afraid of a pending coronavirus surge somewhere that was going to mess up their plans. He blamed it on the players. He blamed it on the players time and time again for not talking to us, not accepting things, not wanting to do it. Like, they blamed him for the stalemate. He could have very easily said, in this climate, you know, we're a little spooked by some things we see that might be happening, so we're just going to hold on to see how they played out. That never happened. This was all about negotiations. This was all about proposals and counter proposals and prorated salary and number of games. So he does not now get to say, well, we would have been messed up by the virus anyway, and further yesterday he said was, it became clearer and clearer that the course of the virus was going to dictate how many games we could play. Now, that's not by itself an incorrect statement, but it's not his thinking. It was not their thinking in May and June when they were both having this silly slap fight back and forth. That was cold, hard negotiating, and it certainly seems like he let it slip on Wednesday that they had no intention of playing more than 50 or 60 games. And I don't know how that plays out in a, you know, in a labor grievance, but to me, that was a big, big time slip of the tongue, and they may end up paying for it.
Yeah, Rob Manfred in Major League Baseball, you guys would be better off apart, in my opinion. I don't know what the deal is with commissioner contracts or any of that, but man, Major League Baseball, I think, has whiffed in a big way with who they have running things from the commissioner's office. Pro Football Focus does a great job breaking it down throughout the season, throughout the offseason. Sam Monson of Pro Football Focus is joining us now. You can follow him on Twitter at @PFF_Sam, and he did a great piece on the 15 players with the most approved entering the 2020 NFL season. But Sam, welcome aboard. How are you? Happy 4th of July weekend.
Thanks. You too. I'm doing good. How about you?
Oh, doing the best we can. Before we get into this prove it year piece that you guys did, we did want to start here, as it's myself, Mraz, with Andrew Bogish, that Cam Newton signs with the New England Patriots, and immediately that became the firestorm of, you know, who's now the favorite in the AFC East, how much does Cam bring to the table? And I know the ultimate what if that there's no way for us or PFF to know is how healthy will Cam Newton be. But if we do get a healthy Cam Newton, how significant an improvement do you feel the Patriots' offense would be with a Cam Newton as opposed to a very unknown with a Jarrett Stidham or maybe even a Brian Hoyer?
Yeah, I think any variety of healthy Cam Newton. And let's remember, there's a hell of a spectrum, even with healthy Cam Newton, between, you know, all the way up to MVP to somewhere around league average a quarterback. Like, he has been all over the map in terms of how good he's been throughout his career, even when healthy. But any variety of healthy Cam Newton is a massive upgrade over Brian Hoyer, certainly, and probably Jarrett Stidham. You know, we're all working a little bit in the dark when it comes to Stidham, but the chances are Cam Newton of any ilk is going to be dramatically better than that. It's still going to be really interesting to see, though, what that offense looks like. You know, what Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick cook up in terms of crafting an offense around Cam Newton and his unique skill set to best take advantage of what he can do. That, to me, is, you know, the most interesting part of this entire thing is seeing what a Bill Belichick offense looks like when he has Cam Newton to work with.
What about, Sam, all the guys around Cam in that Patriot offense, at receiver, at running back, at tight end? If he's at full health, you know, are they good enough to really then maximize what he can do at the quarterback position?
I think the receiving core collectively around him is still a problem, even when he's healthy. It was a problem for Tom Brady last season. It's a problem for Cam Newton this year. And obviously they're two dramatically different quarterbacks, but the fundamental issue is the same, which is, I mean, last year was the slowest wide receiver or the slowest receiving core period in the NFL. This season, it's basically the same group of people. They added a couple of mid-round draft picks at tight end, but wide receiver, there's nobody there that separates, and that's a major concern. Julian Edelman can separate, but really only underneath from the slot, and that's not where Cam Newton does his best work. He needs somebody that can get down the field, that can operate in the media or the middle of the field, operate on the intermediate level, and make some big chunk plays. And for that, the Patriots are relying on, you know, Mohamed Sanu being a completely different player, recovered from injury, or N'Keal Harry taking a massive step forward in year two, and separating's never really been his MO, even back in college, or a guy like Demir Byrd suddenly transforming himself into a different player because he's the one guy on that roster with a modicum of speed. So, yeah, I'd be concerned that this receiving group as a whole, whether it's wide receivers, tight ends, can actually help Cam Newton, or if they're going to be a drag on him and what he can do.
Cam Newton, obviously, the injuries have been such a big part of the story with him the last couple of years, and keeping him upright will be of the utmost importance. In this Pro Football Focus piece that you can find at PFF.com on the NFL 15 players entering prove-it years in 2020, you have Isaiah Wynn, the Patriots' presumed starting left tackle, listed here. You know, he's only had 7 starts at left tackle. It was a guy that Pro Football Focus liked a lot coming out. Truthfully, I have always watched Tom Brady with the belief that Tom Brady has masked a lot of deficiencies along the New England Patriot offensive line, the getting rid of the ball quick, and even with a lack of mobility, I've always found it amazing. And a lot of these guys who have left the Patriots as offensive linemen, take Nate Solder, for example, have struggled when they've left New England and gone elsewhere. And whether that's coaching, whether that's scheme, I do think the loss of Tom Brady and the addition of Cam Newton, though, will still hurt that offensive line in covering up deficiencies. How important is an Isaiah Wynn to that? And do you have confidence in the Patriot offensive line keeping Cam Newton healthy and him still being able to be productive the way Brady, to a degree, was productive with that offensive line?
It's a great point because, you know, data at PFF really has been highlighting how important quarterbacks are in terms of owning their own pressure rate from the offensive line. They control it a huge amount by just how long they're going to hold the ball. And you're right, Tom Brady has been one of the best in the NFL in terms of getting rid of the ball quickly over his entire career. And last season, a huge part of the problem was everybody thought that the Patriots' offensive line took a huge step back a year ago, but because the receivers weren't getting open, Brady was holding onto the ball longer than he ever has before. So it wasn't so much the offensive line, it was the fact that Brady wasn't masking them as much as he used to. He wasn't able to, because there was nowhere to go with the football. So I think that's still a concern. You are moving to Cam Newton, who generally holds onto the ball longer than Tom Brady anyway. So that was going to be a bigger ask for that offensive line, even without any additional concerns. But then you still have that problem of the receivers and the fact that there's nowhere to go with the football if nobody is getting open. So I think it's a real concern that this receiving group is not good enough to give Cam Newton a picture that's good enough to get rid of the ball quickly on a consistent basis, and therefore the offensive line will probably be an issue next year. And Wynn is under pressure now because of that. He steps into a situation, you know, through no fault of his own, where he suddenly has to be a lockdown starting left tackle, and he's going to have a tougher job than he would have if it was a season or two ago, where, you know, you had Tom Brady and knew you were going to get a certain degree of protection from your quarterback.
Sam, another name on your prove it list is Josh Allen, the Bills quarterback. We have spent a lot of time on the air, off the air, trying to figure out just how good the Bills can be. Sean in particular gets really annoyed when people talk about the Bills being super good in the coming season. Where do you guys fall on a Bills projection for 2020?
I think everything in that team is set up for that kind of really good season, but it relies on Josh Allen taking another step forward. And, you know, even Josh Allen, the most ardent Josh Allen supporters, don't necessarily contend that he's really good right now. It's more, look, he took this big step forward from year one to year two. If he takes another big step forward, now you're talking about, you know, a really good quarterback and a player that can take this team where it needs to go. And that's all true, but that needs to happen now. You know, he's under pressure now to take that next big step forward. Otherwise, he's a cap on how good this roster can be, because the Bills have really done a great job in building around him. You know, they've put three receivers now who can all get separation at what they do well. They've rebuilt the rest of the team. The scheme on both sides of the ball is really good. So now all the pressure is on Josh Allen. He needs to take that next development step and prove that he can make those big plays deep down the field and that he can be a consistent quarterback.
One player not listed on a prove-it year in 2020 that I actually think has a lot to prove because of what was basically a lost season, and it kind of relates to Josh Allen, is Sam Darnold, the Jets quarterback, having the mono issues last year. Obviously, he didn't make this list on the 2020. Where do you view the Sam Darnold versus Josh Allen argument? Because while it seems a lot of people want to crown the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen as the favorites, and I get it. They made the playoffs. They have a better defense. They have a better head coach. I look at that quarterback position, and I personally still would rather have Sam Darnold than Josh Allen. Where do you fall on Sam Darnold over a Pro Football Focus and the pressure on him entering 2020?
Well, I think you highlighted the one difference, which is that Darnold essentially has an excuse. You know, you almost throw out last season because of the mono issues, because of the fact that he did turn it around late in the season, and you can kind of craft a case that it wasn't the real Sam Darnold last year. I think the big point, though, is that neither of these guys have necessarily shown that they can be a consistent plus starter down the line yet. So they both enter 2020 with this point to prove that they can actually be that guy. For as much as we've seen from Josh Allen, he hasn't had a PFF grade over a season above 65, and this is, you know, a 0 to 100 scale. 65 is not particularly high. That's, Darnold is the same thing. We haven't seen Sam Darnold post grades that suggest he can be one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL yet. So both these guys need to prove that they can take a pretty significant step forward over a full season. You know, if you want to get to where the top-end quarterbacks in the NFL are, even if you want to get to where guys like Deshaun Watson and Dak Prescott, these sort of top 10 quarterbacks that haven't quite made the breakthrough into being one of the best, that is a long way from where Sam Darnold and from where Josh Allen currently reside. So, yeah, I think he's in the same boat with a Josh Allen in terms of needing a big season in 2020, albeit for different reasons.
Sam, as you write on PFF.com, the Browns have changed everything around Baker Mayfield to put him in the right spot to succeed. What does he have to do, though, as a quarterback, specifically on the field, to be better here in the coming season?
Well, last season, it's not that Baker Mayfield was this flawless prospect coming out. You know, we loved him coming out, but there were negatives in his game. It just always felt like nitpicking to sort of highlight them. But last season, he lent into all those negatives. You know, everything that went wrong in Cleveland in 2019 sort of magnified the things that Baker had a tendency to do badly in college and his first year. And he needs to sort of pull his way out of that rut and reverse course, you know, and stop feeling phantom pressure in the pocket and bailing from clean pockets and basically trying to do everything himself. Just, you know, play within the system, play within the structure of the offense, trust the fact that your pass protection is going to hold up, even though sometimes it won't, and just play your game. And we saw way too many plays last season where Mayfield just didn't trust what was around him and started trying to do everything himself, you know, take off from clean pockets, run to the right, get himself boxed into a corner and just find himself with nowhere to go. You know, the offense should have some structure to it in 2020 that it didn't really have a year ago. And, you know, they have – everything they've done has been about trying to solve all those outside factors that would influence Mayfield into doing things like that. So now all the pressure comes on him to prove that he can, you know, reset, get more relaxed with the system around him, with the people around him, and just trust other people to make plays.
Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus. You follow him on Twitter, at PFF underscore Sam. Sam, one of the bylines of your Twitter profile, which I love, is prematurely predicting decline. And I just want to get your thoughts on Odell Beckham, who's also listed here as a guy with a prove-it deal. Look, I am a New York Giant fan. I don't hide it. I was an Odell Beckham apologist for a long time. I love the guy, love his game, love his player. But the fact remains, Odell Beckham has not been the same player he was very early on in his Giant career over the last two, even 3 years, where the legend of Odell Beckham seems to outweigh the actual what you see on the field from Odell Beckham Jr. When we talk about the most approved, if we don't have a signature star-studded Odell Beckham year, are you confident that we will ever see the Odell Beckham that we once saw, or is that decline in full free-fall mode for him?
Yeah, I guess it depends how close he gets. I thought he was really good in 2018, given the quarterback situation that he was working with. He wasn't as good as we saw, you know, right out of the gate, where he was just phenomenal as a rookie. Second year was incredible. Those first 3 years were pretty amazing. He wasn't that good, but he was pretty close. And when you consider that Eli Manning was in pretty full decline at that point, I thought that was pretty impressive. Last season, you know, he was dealing with this sports hernia injury all season long. I don't know that we ever saw a fully healthy Odell Beckham. But what was maybe more concerning is he and Baker Mayfield just couldn't get on the same page all season long. I've rarely seen a quarterback and a receiver so consistently unable to be on the same page in terms of running the right routes and being in the right spot when the throw is delivered. And I don't know whose fault that was. You know, it's impossible to know unless you're in that room. Was that Beckham consistently getting his route wrong? Was that Mayfield not reading it correctly? But, you know, every time the ball got put in the air, Odell Beckham's running a post and Mayfield's throwing a dig or vice versa. And that's strange. You know, that needs to get itself worked out, because no amount of recovery from a sports hernia is going to put them on the same page if they're just running different routes or expecting the ball to be somewhere it's not. So that, I think, is a big concern that, you know, regardless of how physically talented Odell Beckham is, you know, he can't fix passes that are just thrown somewhere else. So the biggest thing they need to do is to get him and Baker Mayfield on the same page over this offseason and at least give them a fighting chance for Beckham to make all those plays and to be the special receiver we've seen him in the past.
His name is Sam Monson. You can follow him on Twitter, at PFF underscore Sam. Go to PFF.com, Pro Football Focus. They have a bunch of beautiful stuff there. I love following them. And obviously this week we have the NFL 15 players entering prove-it years in 2020 with a lot of what we just broke down there with Sam. If you want to see if there's a player that you're wondering he hits on, go check out that list and make sure you follow him at PFF underscore Sam. Sam, have a great 4th of July weekend, buddy. Appreciate your time this morning.
You too, guys. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Somebody else who is looking for a little respect, just like my dog Eli, is Cam Newton. Boy, my segues have been on point today, Bogus. On point. He, now a New England Patriot, has taken to Instagram because a lot of people have come out with the real question about Cam Newton and the contract he signed and money that basically it's not even a base salary. He can make $7.5 million this year for his 1 year in New England. Richard Sherman has had a problem with it. Others have questioned, why can't Cam Newton get paid? He's a former quarterback. Look, if we're being real about this, we don't know about Cam Newton's injury problems. We also, you know, there's only 32 of these quarterback positions. When you have a couple bad years, that wheel spins quick. Teams draft quarterbacks. And Cam Newton is also in that weird spot where he still can probably be a franchise quarterback if he's healthy. You don't know if he is. And he's also not the kind of guy that would be like a Tyrod Taylor where you're handing off to a rookie quarterback like what will happen with the Chargers and Justin Herbert. That wouldn't make sense for Cam Newton. So Cam Newton took to Instagram and said, and I'm going to get into the way he wrote this in a second because that's another issue I have. I don't know if you've seen the actual post, Bogus. It's not a lot of things money can't buy, but amongst the top of that list of things, you would find respect as one of those. This is not about money for me. It's about respect. Okay. Now, before I get into the problem I have with that, let me just say, what he is telling everybody there is he doesn't care how much he's making. He needs to get the respect back from everybody that he is a big-time franchise quarterback. And what better place to go do that than with the New England Patriots, where you would have had Jared Stidham you're battling with to go play quarterback, and you get to play for one of the best coaches in the NFL, Bill Belichick. Josh McDaniels is a pretty good offensive mind. So I don't think Cam Newton's lying that it is about respect. I'm sure there's an enormous chip on his shoulder, and New England is the perfect place for him to do it. And I would also say that for him, he could say it's not about the money, and I would agree to an extent because he ultimately did sign for this, that probably did outweigh it, but it's also about the money from the sake of he wasn't getting this deal from anyone, Bogus. Like, he wasn't going to get some deal for $22 million a year to be a franchise quarterback. The carousel had turned, and even if he had waited for a franchise quarterback to potentially get hurt to go sign somewhere, which I hope wouldn't happen, but for Cam Newton, that could have been, you know, like if a Teddy Bridgewater situation like would have happened to the Vikings that year were to materialize.
I mean, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. We got there. Like, he still wouldn't get the money. So this is nice to say it's not about the money, it's about the respect, and I do think to a certain extent it definitely is about the respect, but the money wasn't coming and the money wasn't there because the market wasn't there. So, you could act like you're doing some kind of great benefit for turning down more money, but we all know the truth here, Bogish.
Well, and it's also about the money next year. This is about becoming Cam Newton again, being healthy, showing off, being productive, winning football games so that when you get back on the market next winter, teams are now lining up to give you the money that you think you deserve. Like, this is the situation for this year. You're exactly right. There were limited opportunities from the team's perspective, from his perspective. Then you mix in, we don't know where he is physically because we can't check him out in the way things are going right now. So this was not the only option, but it was one, maybe it was the only one. So, like, he didn't have a position really to fight off of for more money here in 2020. So respect is great, and he's not wrong in general, but, like, if there was more money to be had, he probably would have taken more money and be playing somewhere else, and he can afford to rely on respect this year because he's gambling on himself to get a big payday in, what, you know, 10 months from now, whatever the math is, to get you to next March, 8 months from now. So, like, get back to me, I guess, then, right? Like, if he's back on the open market and this year was kind of lukewarm, it's going to be about money then for sure, because he's not going to want to sign for a second year at minimal cost playing for respect.
Right. At some point, it will be about the money if he's playing well. There's no doubt. So he's trying to say the right thing. Now, the next issue I have, Pokish, Cam Newton, we get it. He's kind of a weird cat. The outfits he dresses in post game. This Instagram post, and if you heard me stutter through, it wasn't because of my reading comprehension, although that would have been a good bet as well. Cam Newton is writing, I don't know what the font he's got going on here, Bogus. He's got, like, lines going through circles as if he's writing in the Ghostbuster logo here. He's got those little squiggles above N's and E's, and then he's doing
Cameron Newton.
He's doing weird hashtags where the B's look off. I mean, I don't know what the point of this is, but you read this, and I'm sorry, if I see somebody's Instagram and I basically have to, you know, have somebody translate it for me or really look hard, because, you know, Bogus, DA's alluded to, when you like somebody's Instagram picture, sometimes you're just doing it out of common courtesy. If I got to stop and study your caption, I'm out. So I would not like this post if I was following Cam Newton on Instagram.
To be honest, like, regular letters and words throw you for a loop. So anything that adds to the degree of difficulty is a big hurdle for you.
Right. So just, I'm going to try to just read this again. He has the word it's on top of the S, is like an up, is like a V, and then he goes with the word not. On top of the N is one of the, what do you call those things? The squigglies?
That's a tilde.
A tilde, maybe.
It makes the Ñe in Spanish.
Okay, exactly. And then the O, every single O, it's almost like he went over the top of the words with O's, looks like, and I'm not kidding about this, the Ghostbusters logo. So it's, you know, it's N with a tilde, Ghostbusters logo, T, A with a tilde, we have an L that looks like a T because there's a weird cross in it, another Ghostbusters logo, then there's money bags and money symbols,
tildes, weird Bs that look like they could be percentage signs. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, it's bad enough I've basically just learned emojis. I can't believe I'm looking like the old guy on social media, but please tell me that Cam Newton is not trying to start a trend that now when I go on social media, everybody's going to be writing with Ghostbuster logos and tildes. I can't have that happen, folks.
Oh, I mean, it's a Cam Newton trend. I mean, this is a long-running thing for him. I'm kind of scrolling back through his Instagram page right now to find the last caption that was written in just, like, plain font, and I'm going way back now and still got nothing. He's been doing this for a while. And, you know, it's like people get worked up about what he wears after games. And sometimes, you know, whatever. He doesn't dress the way I would dress. Sometimes it looks ridiculous. But that's his taste versus my taste. It's not that big of a deal. This is another thing. I don't know where it comes from. I also don't know, like, if it's its own font or if he's, like, picking a different font and setting for every single letter, which means that this Instagram post and caption might have taken him like an hour to scroll through, like to find like right. The Greek S and the Spanish N and the Latin B to write all these things. It's I wouldn't have the strength or the attention span to do this. And you're right, it makes me not want to read it, and it doesn't necessarily matter. But, like, I'll just wait for somebody to put it to translate into regular Times New Roman 12, and then I'll read it then.
Which is ironic. Connor Green, our producer today, who put the topic, goes and put this in there. I am promising you, if Connor Green had not done the topic list as a producer and presented to us, you know, some items for us to chew on when you and I went back and forth on what to talk about, I made this a topic that we wanted to talk about in our final hour, the lead hour. I completely think this would have not been talked about on the show today without Connor deciphering what Cam Newton had said, because had this popped up and I just saw the way it was written, I would have said, forget about it. I don't care what Cam Newton had to say. And because of Connor deciphering what was said and putting the topic list, it now became a major lead topic on the show today.
Like, what if it was a really important message? Like, it was telling us how to go find money, or like, I know how to make a COVID-19 vaccine or anything of significance. And I go, you know what, Cam, I don't have time to read this. I'll just deal with it. You know what? I'll be okay without it, because it's crazy. There's capital letters. There's lowercase letters. There's missing punctuation. There's extra punctuation. There's letters I don't even know, or like symbols and signs. I don't even know what they do. There's umlautses. I mean, there's about 9 different languages represented in the letters he chose for this post, and I just don't care. I don't think it's funny. I don't get it. Maybe that's on me and not him, but I just don't get it.
I don't get it. Could you imagine Bill Belichick texting, if he does text, Cam Newton, asking if he wants to sign, and Cam Newton sends him a bunch of Ghostbuster logos and tildes on the grid of the deal? I mean, right
and
away.
I know there's been a lot of dudes in Boston have gotten heat for the way they've handled the Cam signing. I mean, telling us how the Patriots will never put up with Cam celebrating touchdowns up against a montage of dumb Patriot touchdown celebrations as if they didn't happen under Belichick's watch. So I know this has been a somewhat of a touchy situation, but I mean, right, like if he's text, if Bill Belichick's like, Cam, how's the workout going? And he writes back like 9 lines of how it's going and how he's feeling and he's excited to be there, but he has randomly capitalized N's with tildes. I don't know that anyone's reading them.
It's brutal. Cam Newton's new language on Instagram is absolutely struggling brutal. And
maybe it's been explained, by the way. Maybe we're late to this party and like we're missing why he does it. And maybe it's like for a real, because I got burned. I used to Fernando Rodney with his tilted hat, for whatever reason, annoyed me more than it should have. And I got caught because I didn't do my due diligence, and like he does it to honor, I think it's his father. It's he wears his hat like that for a reason, not just to look different. And I was an ass for criticizing him for doing it as if he was just being like a dope. So if Cam is doing this for a reason that we shouldn't be mocking, and I don't know, then again, that's on me, and I apologize, and I clearly didn't learn my Fernando Rodney lesson. But man, I don't get this one.
I don't either.
It's a Friday fiesta. Here's what our listeners in the Target demo are up to.
It's a Target Demo Friday here on the DA Show. Robert tweets in Bogish. Guys, toppings on a hot dog? I made a relish last evening with turkey dogs and mustard. So good. So good.
I have a big wiener in my hand.
Bogues, I personally, I told you, we talked about this earlier in the week, I love a coleslaw on a dog, if not standard ketchup. I refuse to go mustard on a hot dog. I don't know where you stand.
I do one, and like I said yesterday, I always have two. And I have one and one. One mustard, and then my favorite is ketchup. So I close with ketchup. It's a very specific thing. We open with mustard. Tastes good, but the closer is ketchup. If I want to, I'll throw some relish on there, but it's usually that simple. But again, the door's always open for something a little crazy. If I had coleslaw on hand more often, that might make its way onto a dog more often as well.
Kevin tweets in, last weekday of my vacation, just got my badass hashtag Mo Strong shirt in the mail, heading to C-Bus for a little shopping today with my lady. Love you, Jeannie. Life is good, fellas. Hashtag Target Demo Friday. Beam us up. And a great job by Jeremy Kahn and company up there with the Mo, Big Mo show last night. You're going to hear some clips of that on Monday with DA. Mike tweets in, listening in on CBSSportsRadio.com. We're getting ready to do some wedding planning stuff. Hashtag Dark Target Demo Friday. Mark, if I have one word of advice for wedding planning, go with the mashed potato bar. Get
I
the
want
mashed
fresh
potato
potatoes.
Is that still the in vogue thing? I haven't been to a wedding in a while. Is that still a staple of the cocktail hour?
I hope so. I now, because of cancellations, I'm going to have about 5 weddings next year. If I don't get one mashed potato bar out of the 5, I'm going to be very, very disappointed. Manny from Pennsylvania, Manny from PA, good longtime DA show listener, tweets in, catching some sun on the porch with a cocktail and cigar to kick off the 4th of July weekend. Hashtag Target Demo Friday.
How many beers ago? Probably 1,000.
I love it, Manny. I won't have the cigar, but a cocktail is certainly in my future here as we kick off the 4th of July weekend. Senor Pantleg closes out on Target Demo Friday. I'm sorry, but I can never follow Bogue's headlines because I'm too busy repeating over and over. I'm Andrew Bogish, and Andrew, while I'm driving.
Here's Andrew.
You know, Bogish.
Oh, sweet Amy. Sweet Pantleg.
Bogish, every time I text you, I have to be honest, I think the same thing as Senor Pantleg. I always, as I text you, go, Andrew, or I'm Andrew Bogish.
I'm Andrew Bogish.
Just like now when I see my daughter Taylor smile and laugh, I look and I go, you're so funny, like the Anne Ligori. You're so funny. And it's just, it's gross how much the DA show drops have absolutely taken off my life, and that's all I think about now.
You're so funny.
You're so funny.
I can accept this one because, A, it's not a mistake that I made, although Gio is kind of mocking the way I say my name, which is fine. It's also, but it's not like some kind of clever, it's not the rusty stuff died at 23 that will always plague Brad. So at least
Rusty Staub has died at the age of 23.
Unbelievable. All right, and that is your Target Demo Friday. It has been a fun week of the DA show, a week that started with a lot of problems, a lot of anger. There was some angst. There was apologies. And now we get today, DA show, the DA Instagram account with DA basically showing off some man chest for the first time we haven't seen. And also, you listeners are not foxhole people going to rat us out when we do bits to other hosts. It's where our epic fail lies today.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Whose voice was that in the rejoin coming back from break? I haven't heard that one in a long time, and I couldn't tell who
that
it was.
That was Rachel Bonetta. She is a DA show fan favorite.
And I was surprised that she wasn't involved in DA's favorite people. Now, maybe that was a time difference thing because she's in California now, but then I was worried that maybe she had become too big of a TV star.
I do love the DA.
It's still way too early, I think, for DA to be awake, so I will just say that she was absolutely on the list. And I got enough yeses from other people quickly where I had actually lost her phone number. So therefore, gotcha. It was more of he wanted her on. I never ended up reaching out to her.
He faked us all out.
The Mraz legacy was tainted forever.
So
job.
There you go. There you go. So thank you for putting that out there, Pogish.
Andrew.
Well, you didn't have to answer that way. I would just you could have kept yourself.
You know, I just put that out there. I think we have a real trust factor with our listeners, Bokish. I really, really do.
What? I was drunker than you know how drunk I was.
There will be multiple listeners. There will be. That will either tweet at him or Facebook message, do you know that Mraz didn't reach out to Rachel Panetta for My Favorite People because he was lazy and have a number? And our listeners, for as much as we love them, they're great. They got big mouths.
Oh, baloney. We need to have the fans vote on it.
I get a text message yesterday from Mark Moses down in Florida. And our listeners down there had alerted him that we were making fun of him, apparently. You know, listeners, you're in on this with us. Do you have to go open up your big mouths if people miss it? And alert them that we're making fun of them?
People love talking about it.
Can we be a team here?
Look what you did.
Right. But I'm talking about, you know, everybody talks about me not being a foxhole guy. Some of our listeners are not foxhole people. They are not foxhole people.
We were all left, no pun intended, with a sour taste in our mouths.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
All right, Bogus, real quickly, final predictions. Who wins the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest tomorrow morning?
It's going to be Joe, even though I want to bet in the other direction. It's Chestnut, but he's not going to break the record. I feel like the story is going to be that the neutral site limits production, limits intake tomorrow.
Well, we did find out that climate control could be like Drew Brees and the Saints in the dome. That could be the expectation for Chestnut. I'm with you. I think Chestnut wins. The real question, does Badlands Booker finish last out of the six?
Crunching and munching.
I'm going to say no out of respect, not because of actual analysis.
Stomach kind of tells you, hey, you know what? Give me a break.
His stomach is going to tell him he needs a break. I'm going, Booker, we love you. I'm not buying after that music video is released that your focus is there. I think he will finish last, unfortunately, and I think that's where we lie with the Nathan's 4th of July hot dog eating contest, a storyline that I'm sure DA will cover next week. You are out Monday, but you will be with DA the rest of the week. Myself and Pete the Body Bilotti are taking dueling vacation time next week, so we will both be out. So the DA show gang won't be fully together for a little bit, but you'll get plenty of DA and Bogus next week. Bogus, it's been a treat doing these last two shows with you. Love you a long time, pal.
Oh, you're so sweet. Have a great weekend. Be safe, and we'll talk to you when you get back.
All right, Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel did a killer job. Connor Green, your big-time producer, will fill the producing shows most of next week. We thank you so much for listening. Everybody have a happy and safe 4th of July. Celebrate safely. Watch those fireworks light up the sky and chow down on dogs. Have a good 4th of July. The mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.